History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
For My People by Margaret Walker. For my people everywhere, singing their slave songs repeatedly, their dirges and their ditties and their blues and jubilees, praying their prayers nightly to an unknown God, bending their knees humbly to an unseen power. For my people lending their strength to the years, to the gone years and the now years and the maybe years, washing, ironing, cooking, scrubbing, sewing, mending, hoeing, plowing, digging, planting, pruning, patching, dragging along, never gaining, never reaping, never knowing, and never understanding. For my playmates in the clay and dust and sand of Alabama backyards, playing baptizing and preaching and doctor and jail and soldier and school and mama and cooking and playhouse and concert and store and hair and Miss Chumbi and company. For the cramped, bewildered years we went to school to learn to know the reasons why and the answers to and the people who and the places where and the days when. In memory of the bitter hours when we discovered we were black and poor and small and different and nobody cared and nobody wondered and nobody understood. For the boys and girls who grew in spite of these things to be man and woman, to laugh and dance and sing and play and drink their wine and religion and success, to marry their playmates and bear children and then die of consumption and anemia and lynching. For my people thronging 47th Street in Chicago and Lenox Avenue in New York and Rampart Street in New Orleans, lost, disenchanted, dispossessed, and happy people filling the cabarets and taverns and other people's pockets needing bread and shoes and milk and land and money and something, something all our own. For my people walking blindly, spreading joy, losing time, being lazy, sleeping when hungry, shouting when burdened, drinking when hopeless, tied and shackled and tangled among ourselves by the unseen creatures who tower over us omnisciently and laugh. For my people blundering and groping and floundering in the dark churches and schools and clubs and societies, associations and councils and committees and conventions, distressed and disturbed and deceived and devoured by money-hungry, glory-craving leeches, preyed on by facile force of state and fad and novelty, by false prophet and holy believer. For my people, standing, staring, trying to fashion a better way from confusion, from hypocrisy and misunderstanding, trying to fashion a world that will hold all the people, all the faces, all the Adams and Eves and their countless generations. Let a new earth rise. Let another world be born. Let a bloody peace be written in the sky. Let a second generation full of courage issue forth. Let a people loving freedom come to growth. Let a beauty full of healing and a strength of final clinching be the pulsating in our spirits and our blood. Let the martial songs be written. Let the dirges disappear. Let a race of men now rise.
No one knows who the Son of God is except the Father in heaven. And no one can know who the Father is except the Son and those to whom the Son will reveal him. Until now, you haven't known him as I do, but I have come, sent from him to you.
Is he the living God, or is he dead? Is he in the gutter, or in your head? Is he the living God, or is he dead? Is he in the gutter, or in your head?
I ain't Jesus, but understand where Jesus was coming from. I can feel his passion because it is mine to be blessed in the womb of this earth and nurtured by the trees, the animals, the sun, the moon, and the stars, to be touched by them and dance in the rhythm of nature's flow. Oh, what a joy. I ain't Jesus, but I too am displeased with man's inhumanity to man, with the very thought of taking a life, turning and twisting it into a callous plant that hides from the sun and curses the stars at night. The wicked howl of madness finding residence in our souls makes the dark side bright and desirable.
Is he the living God, or is he dead? Is he in the gutter, or in your head? Is he the living God, or is he dead? Is he in the gutter, or in your head?
No, I ain't Jesus, but I love a good song. Fried fish on Friday, some real poetry, a great basketball game, watching black people rise and take charge of their lives and cherish the ancestors and the children we see every day and recognize even a fool may have something wise to
say. Is he the living God, or is he dead? Is he in the gutter, or in your head? Is he the living God, or is he dead? Is he in the gutter, or in your head?
And I'm working on my freedom. I'm working on my freedom every day. No, I ain't Jesus, but I know I can
be
an angel.
Is he the living God, or is he dead? Is he in the gutter, or in your head? Is he the living God, or is he dead? Is he in the gutter, or in your head? Is he? Is he the living God, or is he dead? Is he in the gutter, or in your head? Is he the living God, or is he dead? Is he in the gutter?
Hotep, and good afternoon, my brothers and sisters. Welcome to the Black Reality Think Tank. My name is Dr. William Rogers. I am your host today. We'll be joined by my co-host, Ms. Bonisawa Ayan, and we have a very dynamic and stimulating conversation for you today. Is God a white racist? And we're going to be talking about that in just a few minutes. We really appreciate all of your participation with us here at the Black Reality Think Tank. Always remember, one race, one aim, and one destiny. Up, you mighty race, you can accomplish what you will. We are so happy, as I said, to be here. We are here every Tuesday night from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. We are a part of the Internet radio network called timeforanawakening.com. It is a part of the Black Talk Radio Network, and our program tonight is sponsored by Motherland Media, who also produces a program on this network we'll talk about in just a few minutes, as well as the production of the Black Reality Think Tank is done by the Sankofa Historical Society. And we appreciate our wonderful staff of people that help us to pull this together. Brother Kwaku, who is our technical person, who does a wonderful job of helping, and our wonderful student group out of Howard University in Washington, D.C., who also helps us with our research. So we thank all of them because it would not be possible for them. And then our co-host, who has just recently joined us here in the Black Reality Think Tank, as I indicated, Ms. Bonisawa Ayan, and we're going to be introducing her in a few minutes. And then, of course, all of you who every week will come and participate and talk with us and discuss some of the ideas that we want to do. And so, again, I really, really appreciate and acknowledge your being. We are a call-in format. Our telephone number here is area code 215-490-9832. I repeat, area code 215-490-9832. And you are welcome at any point in time to come on and participate in this conversation. Ask any questions that you want to ask. Nothing is off the table. So you are welcome you to do that, and we appreciate you and your ability to understand what we are trying to do here at the Black Reality Think Tank. We also have an archive. All of our programs and all of our productions are archived through the www.timeforanawakening.com website. You can go on and look for our program, Black Reality Think Tank, as well as the other programs that are on, and listen anytime, 24/7. And you know, we would really love to hear from you. We'd like to know if you think that we're on the right track. Do we need to improve? We're open. You have to be open for improvement. So we welcome your comments, your critiques, your suggestions, and all of the things that are necessary to help us to continue to move this show, this program forward. So we thank you again. We thank you for doing that. So go to the www.timeforanawakening website and make sure you look at some of the other wonderful dialogue there. And while I'm on the conversation of Time for Awakening, I want to just reach out and thank Brother Elliot and Booker from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, who produces the Time for an Awakening program, as well as his host, Brother Richard. They do a magnificent job of pulling this together and have provided for us a fabulous platform for talking about things that empower our people and empower our community. And so I just want to reach out and kind of thank them for doing that as well. The purpose of the Black Reality Think Tank is primarily, we are a historical research program. We are designed to teach, inform, and empower the African-American community leaders. It is through our radio program and social media. We also have a Facebook presence. We have the Black Reality Think Tank page on Facebook. It lists a lot of our programs. Also, there are some of the rebroadcasts are on there. As well as a lot of supplemental material to back up the subject matter that we are dealing with at hand. So that's one of its great values. So you can either look at it at the Black Reality Think Tank or go to Knowledge is Power. That is another Facebook website we have that you can go on and look at that as well. As I say, I post a lot of books sometime and things that will help you empower yourself. As well as documents, historical factors that are real critical to what we are doing. A lot of great research. And I can say I thank my two wonderful research assistants out of Howard University who have access to some magnificent databases, and they can help me tremendously find the right material to obviously support this community effort. So look at our Facebook presence, look at the Knowledge of Power, and also the Black Reality Think Tank page on Facebook, and it also talks about upcoming programs. And so that's what we do. We attempt to try to present well-researched facts and evidential proof that will assist our community in constructing meaningful agendas and setting realistic program goals and objectives. As always, we believe that all of history is a current event, and we do promote the idea that you will never know where you're going unless you understand from which you came. So we want to make sure that our listeners and our program format is designed to help you understand the past, dissect the present, and support implementing a meaningful future. So that is what we do. Let me just quickly mention some of the other programs that we do here on the Time for an Awakening Network. As I said, this program is supported by Motherland Media, which also produces a program called African Perspectives. And that program airs every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Dynamic talk show. Brother Oshiemi Adelabu is the host of that, and he has wonderful guests who come on and also stimulate the mind and stimulate thought as well. And then on Monday evening, Monday afternoon, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time, Acres of Diamonds. Monday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamond. And then from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Monday, Let's Buy Black 365. 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., Let's Buy Black 365. And then, as you know, the Black Reality Think Tank on Tuesday from 8 to 10. Then as well, I want to mention also another program that is a part of the Motherland Media Network, and that is a program called by Brother Franklin Jones. I'm just stumbling here a little bit, but it's the Black People Matrix. Brother Franklin Jones, Monday through Wednesday from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., the Black People Matrix. The host is Brother Franklin Jones, dynamic, stimulating program as well. Every Monday and Wednesday from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And then Revive, program called Revive. And the host of that is POC, is the acronym, but it stands for Proof of Consciousness. That's every Wednesday from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And then Relationships with Joy and Troy, every Thursday evening from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Relationships with Troy, I mean with Joy and Troy, 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Time for an Awakening Network. And then on Friday and Sunday, Time for an Awakening with hosts Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Friday, they air from 8 to 10, and on Sunday, they air from 7 to 10 Eastern Time, right here on the network. And then also Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. That's every Saturday morning from 10 a.m. to 12 noon, 10 a.m. to 12 noon Eastern Time, right here on the Time for an Awakening Network. And that is our lineup currently. There are a lot of more things in the works, I understand, and there are going to be other programs that are going to be dynamic and stimulating for you as well. And so we look forward to being able to do that. I'm going to bring on our co-host in just a minute. But as you know, on the Black Reality Think Tank, one of the things we like to do is we like to give tribute to our ancestors and call it the Ancestral Profile. And we want to give honor. I always have to do that. I have to do that because I follow the teachings and the guidance of the great Fannie Lou Hamer, who said we must always praise the bridges that brought us over. So tonight I want to talk about a recent ancestor, and this individual joined the ancestor world yesterday on August 5th, 2019, on As a matter of fact, that was my birthday. So I'm honored that she has gone on to that place where they will guide us and continue to lead us in the work that we do here on the physical earth. Her name is Dr. Toni Morrison. While working at Random House Publishing in 1970, Dr. Toni Morrison was known as the Black Editor for her commitment to publishing books about the African-American experience. One of her bestsellers was a book called The Black Book, and I was able to find that book back years ago in a used book sale for about $2. And the book was powerful. It is documenting nearly over 200 years of history. Its content was as stark as its title. It was an anthology of artifacts, featured slave auction notices, lynching photographs, blackface advertising, and a fateful clipping from an 1856 newspaper. If you haven't seen that, go to the library and see if you can find it. I don't know if it will be for sale anymore, but it is excellent. It is full of artifacts documenting the horrible years of the transatlantic slave trade. A visit to the slave mother who had killed her child told the story of a woman named Margaret Garner, a runaway, who, as she was about to be captured, attacked her three children, killing one of them. And explaining her crime, she said death was preferable to captivity. She has the newspaper clipping of that incident. And as a result of that, Dr. Morrison wrote a book called Beloved, captured for that story. Dr. Morrison wondered, she said, what comparison, what love could possibly lead a mother to commit so terrible of a crime? And in 1987, she answered that question with her landmark novel about the legacy of slavery, Beloved. I don't know how many of you have read that book, but I'm telling you, you will not be the same after you finish. And then I have to admit, Oprah Winfrey's production company did a fantastic job of producing that in a film. But again, as in anything, the film no way expresses what the book does express. And it raises some very powerful questions. And we did discuss that a couple of times here on the Black Reality Think Tank. And we probably will go back and do that again. So with her Beloved and other writings, Toni Morrison gave voice to the silences in the past, and she created some of the most memorable characters in American literature. The singing, the keening, the praising, the mourning, the laughing, the crying, and the joying, and the loving. They fill her pages in a responding chorus that captures the tragic and joyful complexion of life and race in this country for African people. Now Morrison's voice is solid. Morrison, as I said, died on August 5th at Montefiore Medical Center in New York. She was 88 years old. She is the winner of the Nobel Prize in Literature and a Pulitzer Prize and recipient of the President's Medal of Honor. Dr. Morrison was one of the country's most celebrated writers. The Swedish Academy praised her novels for the visionary force and the poetic import that she provided in her novels. Morrison said one time, she says that she had an unerring ear for dialogue and richly expressive depictions of Black America. And if you read any of her books, you know that she has done that. In 2012, President Barack Obama called her a personal hero. Her novel, The Song of Solomon, he said, taught him how to be, and the late poet and essayist Maya Angelou described her friend as having the insight of a shaman and the lyricism of a great poet. Oprah Winfrey and Toni Morrison attended the Carl Sandburg Literary Awards Dinner at the University of Illinois at Chicago Forum on October 20th, 2010. She was loved by legions of people and fans who discovered her work either through the Jonathan Demme film or Beloved or through Oprah's book club, which selected four of her novels. Morrison had never dreamed of becoming a writer, she said, as she often said she couldn't find the books she wanted to read. Beginning with her first novel, published when she was 39, she filled the void with an outpouring of fiction, children's books, and a play about Emmett Till, and an opera based on Beloved, as well as scores of essays and book reviews. Her most recent novel, her 11th, was God Help the Child. It was published in April of 2015. She was famous for her magisterial presence with her graying dreadlocks and an affection for scarves and a small heart pendant of butterstone in remembrance of her son, Sade, who died at 45. Marcion described writing as a high-wire act in which she sought to blur the line between the serious and popular fiction. Her longtime friend, Claudia Brodsky, remember Marcion for her uncompromising belief in the power of literature. More than anything, Dr. Marcion believes that books have an ethical responsibility to shape society and culture. She wanted her readers to be challenged, said Brodsky. The goal of literature was not just to challenge you in formalistic or aesthetic ways, but to enhance your imagination. She wanted to enrich their imaginations, to help them look past barriers of the past and see her characters standing in front of them. Marcion Brodsky said, resented any tendency to marginalize her work as that of a woman's writer or an African-American writer. She was writing for all people at all times, he said. As adept as she was in exploring the complexities of identity and race in her prose, Dr. Marcion was foremost an explorer of her own identity. She was born Chloe Wolfert. She changed her name in college. Tony from St. Anthony, her baptismal name, when she converted to Catholicism as a child, and Marcion from an early marriage that ended in divorce. She didn't intend for Toni Morrison to be her published name, but when she finished her first book, The Bluest Eyes, the gallery read a novel by Toni Morrison, and by then the name had been recorded in the Library of Congress. She came to accept her twin identities. Her public person, she claimed, was Morrison, but when she wrote, she became Wolfert, the child who lived in a world of inequality. In order to her to be Toni Morrison, said her friend and poet Nikki Giovanni, she had to invent Toni Morrison so she could become who she is and who she wants to be, not who other people wanted her to be. Chloe Ardelia Wolfert was born on February 18, 1931. She was the second of four children. She grew up in Lorain, Ohio, a small industrial town west of Cleveland. Morris described Lorain as neither plantation nor ghetto, but a place where segregation was enforced not so much by laws, but by understanding. Her parents were fierce in their convictions. When the family finally went on public relief, her mother wrote President Franklin D. Roosevelt to complain about the meals. And when the new movie theater opened in Lorain, she made her children sit where the white children sat. Morrison went to Howard University in Washington, where she was exposed to segregation in public transportation and high schools. She studied the classics and joined a troupe of actors who, while traveling in the South, stayed in black hotels or in the homes of Zion or Baptist congregations. She earned a master's degree in American literature from Cornell University, and afterwards she returned to Howard to teach, meeting the poet Amira Baraka, the aspiring politician Andrew Young, and activist Stokely Carmichael, and writer Claude Brown. Toni Morrison poses with her 1977 novel entitled Song of Solomon during a reception in Paris on September 21st, 2012. In later years, she taught at Princeton, inspiring a new generation of writers with the moral imperatives of literature. She was a chess player, said one of her students, novelist David Truier. People don't talk about that. They talk about her lyricism, her vernacular. They don't often talk about her intellect and the war she waged on the received notions of being African-American. In 1957, she married Harold Morrison, a Jamaican architect. They broke up when she was first with their first son, Howard Ford, when he was three. And when she was pregnant with her second son, Slade Kevin, she felt she didn't conform to her husband's notion of what a wife should be. "I don't think I did any of that very well," she said. "I did it ad hoc, like any working mother does." Her first job in publishing was with the textbook division of Random House. She was 14. Morrison had considered a life as a dancer, but Jane Austen, Leo Tolstoy, Fyodor Dostoevsky, and Richard Wright changed her mind. Finding time between her boys and her work as an editor, she rose each morning at 4 a.m. "I used to write with my children, pulling on my hair, babies pulling on my earrings," she said. "My baby once spit up orange juice on my tablet, and I just wrote around it." The Bluest Eyes, initially rejected by two publishers, is the story of Picola Brillo, who sees herself as ugly for not being white. Written at a time when "Black is beautiful" was the rallying cry. Morrison wanted to remember when that wasn't true, when being black was painful. In 1968, she moved to New York, where she worked with Angela Davis, Muhammad Ali, Chinua Achebe, and honed her own voice as a writer. Her third novel, The Song of Solomon, won the 1978 National Book Critics Award, beating out Joan Didion's A Book of Common Prayer and John Cheever's book, Falconer. And her critical reputation grew. Robert Gottlieb, the editor-in-chief of Knopf Publishing, encouraged her to leave publishing. "You can write writer on your tax returns," he said. With a simple dedication, 60 million and more, a reference to the number of black people who died in the 200 years of slavery, Beloved was a radical piece of writing as it was profound. "I certainly thought I knew as much about slavery as anybody," she told the LA Times, "but it was the interior life I needed to find out about." Beloved was a triumph of the imagination, a book that followed the tradition of William Faulkner with a story as realized as his prose was incantatory. Imagining the murdered child, Morrison gave words to the ghost, who lives in the company of her mother, Seth. "I'm not dead," said the child, known as Beloved. "I sit, the sun closes my eyes when I open them. I see the face I lost. Seth is the face that left me. Seth sees me, see her, and I see that smile, and her smiling face is the place for me." When Beloved was not nominated for a National Book Award, intellectuals and writers protested against each oversight and harmful whimsy in a statement printed in the New York Times around that time. For all of American letters, the letter addressed Morrison. "You have advanced the moral and artistic standards by which we must measure the daring and the love of our national imagination and our collective intelligence as a people." Some took exception to the book. Critic Stanley Crouch called it trite and sentimental. He liked Morrison to P.T. Barnum and objected to the book's commercialism. 6 years later, Morrison received a phone call from the Swedish Academy. Brodsky recalled how she and Morrison twirled around in an impromptu dance as the reporters waited outside her office. She was the 11th American to win the Nobel Peace Prize. Not long after the Nobel announcement, Toni Morrison lost her home, a houseboat on the Hudson River. A fire consumed drafts of her books and her son's school reports, family photos, and first editions. When an interviewer asked her about it, her eyes filled with tears. "Let's not go there," she said. In 2010, her son, Slade, died at 45 of pancreatic cancer. And for a time, Dr. Morrison stopped working. When asked on the Oprah Winfrey Show about his death and how she might find closure, she rejected the idea as some kind of an insult. She ultimately finds solace in her memories. And like so many of her characters, she welcomed the ghost into her life. While critics are hard on her later novels, arguing that her writing had become overwrought and her plots were too tangled, Morrison was uttered and bothered by that. So what Toni Morrison and Maya showed was a willingness to fight for their vision and to courage to create themselves, said Nikki Giovanni. She celebrated courage in Stockholm at the Nobel ceremony. offering words of encouragement for a new generation of writers. Passion is never enough, neither is skill, she said. But try, for our sake and yours, to tell us what the world has been to you in the dark places and in the light. Don't tell us what to believe and what to fear. Show us belief, wide skirt, and the stitch that unravels fear's curl. Dr. Toni Morrison. That was a writing in the recent copy of the Washington Post on her life. I wanted to read the full story because it is a dynamic piece of information, and it really gives us a wonderful foothold to begin this conversation as we ask the question, is God a white racist? And so this country has driven us to that point, and it makes us ask questions like that. It makes us have to review who we are and what we are doing. We have lived some very horrible and brutal times. And so a voice like Dr. Toni Morrison helped us understand that. She also wrote a book once, and I didn't mention that, but she wrote one on a slave ship. And she talked about, in a fictional way, what the life was possibly for our people in the hold of a slave ship. Very powerful book. So I offer our audience, our listening audience, and I encourage you, not only because of her transition to the ancestral world, but for the power it holds in historical analysis, is to look at some of her works. They were powerful books. And Beloved is clearly one of those that helps us understand what the possibilities of infanticide was really like. What is it when a mother kills her child because she doesn't want her to suffer? That's a powerful analysis that we have to look at in terms of our trauma and our plight on America. Okay, my brothers and sisters, we are ready to get into this dynamic conversation. As I said to you earlier, I have a wonderful a co-host that's a very dear friend from Greensboro, North Carolina, a very powerful activist. Has been done a lot of work in the community, very encouraging to young people and others. And so I'm so happy to be able to welcome her and introduce her to some of you and then obviously just present her to others because you know her work and you know her idea. Ms. Bonisua Ayan. Good afternoon, Ms. Ayan. How are you today?
Good evening, Hotep. How are you, Dr. Rogers?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I hope you had a good and great day yesterday. I didn't know it was your birthday.
Oh, yes, yes, I did. It was wonderful. Yeah, my family surprised me with a dinner and a birthday cake and some balloons and a cactus plant. And it was a really a great day. It really is. So thank you so much.
Okay, good, 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 good.
Yeah.
Good to hear it.
So, I just want to leave any introduction, any opening thoughts that you have, because I know we're going to get into the subject in just a minute, and I want to just give you a chance to tell us a little bit about your day and obviously some things that you might want to begin in terms of our discussion.
Actually, I'd like to listen. You were, you know, okay. You always teach so well, so I was sitting here learning, you know.
Well, I do.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm just saying, okay, I mean, your choice.
Yeah.
You're my co-host.
Yeah, I want to kind of listen and, you know, see where things go. The topic is great as usual.
Okay.
Yeah. But okay. I want to give my greetings to everybody. Greetings of black love. I do want to say I'm beginning to see the importance of black love. We stay so angry, you know, at the enemy for doing this constant harm. I'd like to see us put more energy into loving each other.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about that. Yeah.
We have to.
Okay. Well, let me just begin by saying that the title, Is God a Black Racist, comes from a book that was published back in the 60s. It was published at a time when the civil rights movement was in swing, very powerfully in swing. There were crazy things that were coming on. You had the Birmingham church bombing of four little girls. And you have to ask, you had to ask the question, not have to, you had to ask the question. What in God's name would cause somebody to do this? In the church on Sunday morning, getting ready to sing in the choir, and a bomb blew them to smithereens. How could you not do that? So a lot of the people were beginning to begin to just start, just strike right out and question the whole existence of God. And where is God? How could you allow this to happen? How could you allow these babies to have to experience such terrible trauma? And so that was it. And so he wrote this book, as I said, back in 1960. And he was attempting to raise that question. He is a theologian, by the way. He is in the he was in ministry, and very clearly he understood, you know, and had taught for many years. But I'm sorry, we got there's a call coming from the loud times. Microphones, those of you who are online that may have your microphones are very sensitive, so they will come through. I apologize to that to our audience. But as I indicated in the promotion, in the age of Trump, and this question has definitely now risen again, how could somebody walk into a Baptist, a church, an AME church, in the middle of a service, a prayer meeting at that, walk in there, sit down, and blow people's heads away? What kind of God do we serve that would allow that? And that is the question that forces one to ask the question, is God a white racist? And that's what the gentleman that was the author of this book did that. So what that did in the 60s, along with all that other turbulence, the Birmingham burning, the Emmett Till, and some of the other ones, is that a small group of theologians who were really associated with the Black Power movement separated themselves from the mainstream Black church, physically and philosophically. They were saying that the theology that they were preaching was not enough to move people in the age of the racism and segregation and coming from the vows of slavery and the people that it was dealing with. And so they created something called Black Liberation Theology. And it was based by founders, Dr. James Cone, who was recently joined the ancestral world, and J. D. Otis Roberts, who, and they both of them rigorously retested them, the malleability of scripture. You know, what is it when you say the children obey your masters, and some of those other things that you find in the New Testament, and the whole thing about love and forgiveness, and how do you, where, what do you do in the midst of bombing a church with four girls getting ready to go in the choir and sing? How do you capture that and make the scriptures speak to that? How do you do that? And even Dr. King said the same thing. As you know, he was the speaker at the eulogy of those four girls. And if you've never heard his speech, you need to listen to that, because he raises similar understandings. He didn't say it that way, but he does raise that in his speech. At that time. So anyway, Dr. Cone and Theodos Roberts started this new movement of clergy, and they argued that the Jesus of Christianity had been corrupted through colonialism and white supremacy, and that the true image of God reflected the plight of the oppressed. In America, this meant poor Black people. Dr. Howard Thurman wrote a book called Jesus and the Disinherited, and he was responding to the same thing. Black liberation theology rendered the gospel as being Black and populist. It was embraced by the mainstream. It was not embraced by the mainstream Black church, and it was considered to be in some cases seditious, and obviously to white churches, heretical. Get that right. The secularist thought is there was a lot of questions going around that kind of liberation theology was really embracing Marxism. So in the 1970s, William R. Jones took the radical step of writing and responding to the Black liberation theology faith, and he wrote a book called Is God a White Racist? And in the book, he suggested an alternative approach to theology. And until the alleged negative elements are appropriately reconciled with the alleged benevolence of God, James wrote that his goodness remains an open question. There is an endless useful concept within which Jones calls divine racism. And that's an interesting concept that he made, and it's an interesting reading if you get a chance to look at his book. He said the idea is that the benevolence or the wrath of God actually corresponds to ethnic lines in America. And in turn, an ethnic God practices tribalism, as he said. Ethnic suffering does not strike quickly and then leave after a short and terrible siege, he wrote. Instead, it extends over a long historical era. And that is what his book began to do. It had began to question the theology in which the black church operated. Many argued that it didn't have a black theology. And so in the age of Trump, there are new writings that are coming out again looking at this whole question. There was an article that appeared recently in a book, in a magazine called The Journal of African Religions. The Journal of African Religions. And as you know, I like to give you the resources, so sometimes you can go and read these yourself. The Journal of Africana Religions. The Journal of Africana Religion. Very powerful publication. In volume 3 and number 4, in 2015, two writers, Stephen Finley and Biko Mandela Gray, wrote an article called God is a White Racist, Immanent Atheism as a Religious Response to Black Lives Matter and State-Sanctioned Anti-Black Violence. I repeat, the name of the article is God is a White Racist, Immanent Atheism as a Religious Response to Black Lives Matter and State-Sanctioned Anti-Black Violence. And again, it is in the Journal of Africana Religions, Volume 3, Number 4, in 2015. It can be found on pages 443 to 453. It's published by the Pennsylvania State University Press, and it appeared in the JSTOR database. And just briefly, looking at the abstract from that, because that helps get into tonight's conversation, is that African Americans, they say, and their ancestors have been subjected to forms of violence premised upon the supremacy of the state as the ultimate, immutable, transcendent. This supremacy usually manifests itself as an insidious, covert form of white supremacy coded as law and order. This article, God is a White Racism, deals with the nature of white supremacy, and it does so in the wake of the deaths of Eric Garner and Mike Brown, arguing that the vindication of police officers as a form of theodicy, one that protects the divine state from charges of injustice and, more bluntly, evil. The response to this theodicean form of reasoning, a form that consistently subjects black bodies to multiple forms of suffering and death, and justifies that death by recourse to the power of this state, is atheism. This form of atheism is not necessarily a rejection of the traditional concept of God, but rather an immanent atheism that rejects the transmutation of the state as divine and above reproach. How many of us have asked the question, how could it have been allowed to let the police do what they did to those children, to Eric Garner and to others, and nothing happened to them? And if you listen for the rationale coming from the state, it sort of, in a sense, embraced that law and order theodicy kind of approach and using God to justify, just like it did in slavery. The justification of the enslavement of African people was justified by God, according to the slaveholding South. And the question then becomes, what kind of God is that? What kind of religion allows something like that to happen? And so these writers had began to question that. So if that is God, according to William Jones, if that is God, then God is a white racist, allowing that. Now, your philosophy and your theology of what that is and what causes a solid God in the midst of turmoil is something that a community has to work with. You have to begin to really, and our teachers need to come forward, and that's why we're doing this show. There are many times we question that, even a lot of times in our own personal suffering. A lot of times we try to do what's right. We follow what the scriptures tell us about loving your brother and do unto others as you have them do unto you. Feed the hungry and clothe the naked and do all of those things that Jesus did according to the scriptures. And then you catch holy hell. And then somebody comes along and a bullet comes through a window and kills a six-year-old child. How could God have allowed that to happen, is what we are asked. How could this baby, who had never even experienced life yet, die from a stray bullet on the streets of this country? And it forces those of us in the religious and those of us who are protesting the religious encompassment of that, how could this be? How could a just and righteous God allow that? And as you know, this is a think tank format, and we're not posing it to come up with a truism. We're forcing it to ask ourselves a question, because right now, as you know, and what we've been doing in our series here, is that the black church is under question, and its supporters and its significance of the community. Any honest and open person will tell you that in many of the black churches in America, the attendance is leaving. The churches are dwindling. They are small numbers. You can ride by a church on a Sunday morning and look at the parking lot. It's almost empty. And you have to ask, why are people leaving? One of the upcoming programs that we are going to do is leading. We want to ask, first of all, things like, why are there so many women in church and there are no men? Where are the men? What happened to them? Why aren't men going to church? And we're going to address that. And a lot of times when you ask these questions, the clergy run from you. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to get into a discussion like that. You know, and so they stay away from it totally. And so you can't offer and get a answer to help you struggle in your thinking and in your thoughts. And that's the sad part of that about our community. We don't want to talk about this. I'm sure that there are many people who saw the title of this program today and were turned away from it. Said, what is wrong with him? Dr. Rogers has lost his mind. And that's because we don't want to talk about those critical areas that are going to be a part of the liberation of our communities. We put a lot of hope and faith in religion and black faith. We always have. We did that before we came over here in the slave ship. We did that in our native land. Very spiritual people. And when you look at the traditional religions of Ifa and the Igbo and the Akan religions, we see that power, that unquestionable activity of God. And when I was coming up as a young man, we were told, don't question that. Don't question God. You can't do this. That's an abomination. Christians start questioning, asking stuff. But we're looking for guidance now because we are faced with some things that are terrible. We're faced with some situations and some ideas. You've got a president who sits up there and openly and blatantly attacks our people. He calls a black woman a dog. He said all kind of other names about folk. And there are folk behind them shouting and clapping their hands because they're glad he do it. So we're facing, and so you may say, well, that ain't nothing. Ain't nothing. Well, it's not nothing right now. And as the book says, stuff like this festers. And you may not see a major damage process right now. but it will fester and it will become that in a little while.
Dr. Rogers.
Okay, just one question, and I'll bring you on. So that is the focus of this discussion. We want to open up that seal that you say should never be open, and discuss and question our struggle and what is it to do. I'm sure in the holds of those slave ships, coming across that Atlantic and watching and listening to that water slash up against those windows in those wooden boats, and watching the feces and the urine that was falling on people who may have been in the lower decks, and as they cried out, you know, whatever the religious name, Oladura, whoever, where are you? I need you right now. And if that's not the case, then there has to be some kind of a philosophical, theological understanding that you have of why God has not responded in the midst of all that suffering. The scriptures tell us Jesus questioned it. You know, in the Garden of Gethsemane, as the story goes in the scriptures, God said, Lord, take this bitter cup from me. Come, you don't let me die like this. I've done tried to do all I can do. I've fed the hungry, clothed the naked, healed the sick, raised the dead. I've done your work. Why do I need to die like now? And the flesh will do that. The flesh will make you say that. So all of the skeptics and critics who might be sitting back now saying, why is this man being a heretic and attacking that? Flesh will make you say that. Now, if there's something, and that's what we want to talk about and look at in a different way, is if we are going to continue to embrace our religion in God, we have to somewhere discuss this, because our children are not buying into this. They're just not going to do it. Okay, Sister Yan.
Well, first I want to say that, you know, that questioning of the Bible and why these things happen to us, that was happening as soon as we were able to understand what was going on. But like you said, for centuries, we weren't allowed to ask questions. As a matter of fact, during the era of Jim Crow terrorism, a lot of young people would ask their parents, why do you have to step off the sidewalk, you know, when a white person passes? Why, you know, did Uncle So-and-so get murdered and tortured and lynched? And they would ask those questions, right. And they would get slapped. They would get told to shut up, don't ask any questions. Right. It was a very harsh response to people asking questions. So we've asked the questions. Problem is, there are no answers. And so I want to start off right at the bat. I would say humanity, but black folk, especially Africans, we've been asking why for the longest. There are no answers that make any sense. And to answer the question, why would a God, especially a loving God, allow the level of suffering and trauma and pure hell that we've gone through for so long?
Right.
And so I've come to a point in my own spiritual development where I strongly believe that there are no answers to some of these questions, especially things that have been going on for centuries, maybe millennia. Human suffering.
Right.
You know? So instead of asking why, I now focus on what can be done to teach differently, so we can do better, instead of sitting around wailing and, you know, and asking why.
Okay.
Because that's not going to get us anywhere.
Okay.
And it hasn't gotten us anywhere. Asking why is time wasting. We search for answers, we search for reasons, and there are none that are beneficial, that would satisfy. Why would, you know, someone get beaten to death and thrown off of a roof? You know, as I experienced when I was younger, there's no why for that. There's no answer for that that's satisfactory.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a waste of time, I want to say that. And the other thing is that, you know, we're using this book, you know, the Bible, and honestly, this book was written by Europeans for Europeans. And I'm talking about the one that we've been taught out of for the past 400 or 500 years.
Yeah, the words, the King James.
By and for Europeans.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, you know, and it was used, the book was used as a tool for control and oppression.
Right.
The book was not, so Christianity was not forced on the African for the purposes of enlightenment. You see what I'm saying? Or spiritual development. That book was forced on us as a method of control. It was used as a weapon, and now we're in a position where it's been so ingrained in us that we need to, you know, believe the God of the European, because God is not even an African word, so I don't even use that word. But it's so deeply ingrained in us, we're struggling with that doctrine, when that doctrine was not created by us.
Right. That's true.
Now, we can, you know, since we're struggling with it, since that's what so many of us embrace and are ingrained with, you know, there is a liberation message that is in there, because European were oppressing each other and torturing each other. So they spoke to those issues.
Right.
So we can use that, but that's not ours.
Okay.
But since it's here, you know, it is beneficial. Black liberation theology is beneficial. Many pastors are afraid to teach it.
Okay.
And we really, as a black community, need to start forcing that issue, because, yes, we're just going through a new Jim Crow, as Michelle Alexander put it. This is with that crazy Donald Duck and the rest of those clowns he has up in, well, dangerous people he has up in his cabinet. You know, this is a new Jim Crow. It's the same thing we were going through from 1890 to 1954,
right.
Out in the open.
That's right. You know, and as you said, our ancestors understood that. And so we have questioned this many times before. And I recall in the history, Bishop Henry McNeil Turner, back in the 1800s, late 1800s, early 20th century, called God a Negro. He said, God is black, so stop saying he's white. And that theology sets off a whole nother discussion, and it forces questions to ask. His name was, again, Bishop Henry McNeil Turner. He was an A&M bishop. He was an army chaplain at one time. And so that was, it was called rhetorical theology, but it was, can you imagine him when he said that back in that period of time? Can you imagine what folks must have done and what they must have said?
Yeah.
How they responded.
Yeah.
But he was responding to the suffering, and he was responding to the imagery that is in our mind in terms of the concept of liberation. And that's what it is. The whole scripture and gospel has got to liberate its people. It's got to lift its people out of whatever. And that's all over the Testament. When you talk about the Israelites and the Jews, it's about liberation of the Jews from the persecution of the many nations that came after. Now, it was only just not only Egypt, the Chaldeans, the Assyrians, the Persians, all of them were persecuting them. And the scripture's full of those stories that talk about liberation. And one of the things that is necessary in liberation, you have got to see the God of liberation like you.
Well, you know, see, the thing is, another mistake that we make,
right.
God is a spirit. As far as I know, every one of the nine world's major religions, indigenous religions, all say that God is a spirit or the unseen. There are no pictures of God. The only one that draws a picture of God to reflect themselves are the Europeans.
Right.
The rest of the religions will depict what in African spirituality are called emanations of God, or representatives, or even the messengers of God, like Muhammad and Jesus and Zoroaster and Baha'u'llah. Those messengers of God,
right.
They're not the God. They are messengers carrying a message to the people, you know, for that time.
Right.
in our human, you know, evolution.
Right, exactly.
But those messengers look like the people that they were talking to. Buddha looked Asian.
He's Asian, yeah.
All right, the who is it with Hinduism? That person looked like an Indian.
Right.
All right, the African emanations of God, the Orisha, they are black.
Yeah.
So each group will have a messenger or spiritual entities that look like them. But the European makes the whole creator look like them.
Right.
And we get confused and we'll say things like, well, your God and my God. No, most religions and most spiritual systems acknowledge the existence of one creator with various messengers. That
right.
makes sense?
Right. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So
that's something that people, especially black people, we really understand because in many ways we're ignorant. We're ignorant about religious belief systems, and even just that issue of a messenger versus a God, that's a big one. When you're in the church and you hear things like Buddha is a big fat man with a big fat belly and he ain't God. No, he's not God. He's a messenger from God.
Right. Exactly.
Buddha's never said he was God.
Right.
You know, so it's that level of ignorance or unknowing and confusion that also keeps us unable to seek liberation because we're confused.
Right.
And then one more quick thing. Then this whole thing about Jesus, you know, with the Bible.
Yeah.
First, Jesus, you know, is we're taught as a white man, you know, with the long hair. We see the pictures of the long hair and the blue eyes or whatever, you know. And then now we evolve a little bit. We say, no, well, Jesus was black because the Bible actually says that his skin was brown.
Right.
And his hair was woolly.
Right.
You know, and then, well, the next question is, well, did Jesus ever exist? You know, and we've got all of this confusion about Jesus.
Yes.
So we need to get some real clarity on some stuff, because that mental confusion, that's going to keep us stuck in this cycle of talking and trying to understand when real spirituality is about becoming empowered. Leave it there.
And you're right. And it keeps us divided as a people. That's the other part.
Yes.
So we can
yes,
never bring
absolutely.
The community together, you know. You have to.
Yeah, my God versus your God when there's no such thing. That's not
right.
even a rational thought.
Right. And I might kill you over it.
Yeah.
I might treat you over that.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And so we have to discuss. Let me go to our audience. I want to briefly ask a few people what their position was. I'm going to go over here to my good brother out of North Carolina, Brother Herbie White. Brother White, do we have a right to question whether or not God is a white racist? Is that something that's correct as a community and as a liberation idea?
Yes, very much so. Good evening, Dr. Rogers.
Good evening, my brother.
This uh-huh. And it's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
What we have to understand is that God in the European concept was created in their image. They created God in their image to serve their nefarious purposes.
Okay.
They never believed in God as a spiritual being for the well-being of everybody. This was a con for them to use against other people for oppression and exploitation that they used all over the world.
Right.
So they put it in the form of a religion, and they tell you that they're holy people and God is loving everything, but they never believed in that. That's all a con. That was all a con that needed to be used to exploit you. Once they got you here, they needed something else other than force to control you. So they gave you something. It was unsuitable for you.
Okay.
Christianity was unsuitable for black people enslaved, but you didn't have a choice. What they told you was had to be, else you got hurt real bad.
Okay.
So if you were punished severely for not accepting that, then when you had children, you told your children to accept it to keep them from being hurt.
Right.
So they grew up with it as a reality. But it never really exist. White people do not believe in the Ten Commandments. If they did, none of what happened to us could have happened to us. So this whole, it's not a question of is God a white supremacist. White people are white supremacists, and they created their own God.
Right, exactly.
It's not yours. It's not the God that you knew before you were kidnapped. Your God didn't act like that.
Right.
I'm using God as a word, but your spiritual understanding didn't act like that. But this was something that was forced upon you along with everything else, along with the murder, the rape, the torture, and everything else. But they needed to deify their behavior. So they put God everywhere. And they said, put in all the courtrooms, in God we trust, and all of this stuff. They put churches, they had white people went to church on Sunday morning and whipped you and raped you on Sunday afternoon.
Right. That's a fact.
So that didn't have anything to do with God. You don't judge a person by what they say. You judge a person by their deeds. If I tell you I'm a man of God, that don't mean nothing. You have to look at how I live and how I act to determine whether I'm a man of God.
That's right.
And if you look at white people's behavior, you know they don't have nothing to do with God. As a matter of fact, from what I heard, Lucifer claimed that he had created some of the most evil things in the history of the world. But when he see white people coming, he leaves.
Right. He runs, because he can't handle it. He's nowhere near. And you're right. And you think about some of the atrocities that are done in that way. You know, it's not a laughing matter because it's true. I mean, horrible stuff. You know what they did to us? Have a woman from a tree and cut open her womb and took out her baby, threw it on the ground, and stomped his head. Who does that?
Mm-hmm. White people.
And then they burn a cross about it. What kind of mess is that? So you're right to ask that. You're right to ask that. Let me ask you, Brother Pugh, should we have a right to question whether God's a white racist, or question, you know, that type of support of that kind of behavior from a deity?
Well, actually, Brother Wright and Sister Ayan, they pretty much, they pretty much covered it. I mean, I think, you know, these gods are designed to, your God is designed to help you, and his God is designed to help him. And so, you know, obviously, you know, we were just using somebody else's God. So that's how I see it. So.
Okay. All right. You're right. Sister Yan, let me ask you, so who is it that, and I just use this hypothetically, who is this as First Baptist Church of whatever city we're talking about on Sunday morning, who is it that they're worshiping? What is that God? What is the dynamics of that God? How would you explain that in terms of understanding the differences here and what we're looking at? Where does that God come from? The God that First Baptist, the Black First Baptist Church of such and such city in America on Sunday morning coming up will be singing and praising a God.
What is that God?
Who is that God?
That is a Eurocentric idea of what a supreme being is. An angry, vengeful, jealous, you know, all of the character defects or sins that we should not commit, you know, which is to be angry and to be jealous or whatnot. This God is
okay.
That they've taught us.
You know, Dr. Rodney.
And that is why we're so afraid of God and so afraid to question.
Right.
And that's the God that the average, you know, Black church member is praising. Okay. And so much of it is out of fear.
Okay.
They say, I love the Lord, but when we see how they don't stand up, our churches do not stand up. One reason, because there's no liberation theology taught. But also, in general, when these horrible things happen to us, the murders of our men and the tortures of our women, they're killing and beating more black women and children now. That's on a high increase. Churches are not standing up. Okay. You know,
Dr. Rogers.
Okay, I'm going to come to you just a second.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I would say a fear-based. There's a fear-based teaching that's going on in the church, and the image of a white God is seared into the black psyche. And so liberation theology is critical if we're going to stick with Christianity, for those who stick with it. Liberation theology does need to be taught to give us an alternative.
Okay. All right. Who was that calling me? Someone had a point?
Dr. Rogers.
Yes.
This is Reverend Rogers. How are you?
Oh, fine. Hey, how you doing, Reverend Rogers? How you been?
I'm doing fine. First of all, I want to thank you for your program. It's been a very enlightening program. I have been able to look at or listen to some of it as you have done your series. I have not heard all of it yet.
Right.
When you said First Baptist, it kind of sparked me because I wanted to speak on something just for a minute.
Okay, good. Go right ahead.
I am battered and bruised over the beating that the church is taking right now. But to be perfectly honest with you, one of the things that we have forgotten is that we have to move past. We know that the white slave owner, the Christian slave owner, was a brutal individual. And even after he converted the slave to be a Christian, he still enslaved him. We know that. We know all of the horror stories that came about during the slavery and the transatlantic forges and the things that happened, and the various people that use Christianity as a tool to keep our people down. But one of the things we must realize is that in black liberation theology, one of the things that we try to do is try to move people beyond that point, because we realize that all of that is the case. But we are here now. And because we are here now, we have to teach what the scriptures teach us about what the true Jesus was about. And Jesus said he came to eradicate poverty and to bring about freedom and liberation for the oppressed. Okay. Now, even though we look at that and we say, well, that's, you know, European or white centric or whatever, you know, the thing is that we have to look at that. We have to use what has been given us to elevate our people. Just like, when white folk didn't like the hog, and they threw away the chitlin, and they threw away the rib, but we used it. We took it, and we began to use it to our advantage. And this is what we have to understand in the true black church or the traditional black church. We try to use Christianity as a tool to elevate our people and to move them in a path that gets them to understand the realization that the book is really about them and their struggle, and how to overcome that struggle. And that's what I wanted to say.
Okay.
So on Sunday morning at First Baptist in Holly Springs, I can't speak for every First Baptist,
right,
but that's what we're doing. We're trying to use the scripture to elevate our people and to get them to a better point, a better understanding, move beyond the concept of where it came from, and use that tool to elevate the people in a way that they will be not only victorious in life, but they'll have a better understanding of where they came from,
right,
and what happened during the period of slavery and Reconstruction.
Okay, so and let me just ask this one question, then I want to go to somebody else. So the God that is being served now, in the church, the black church, how do people come to grasp with that? In that struggle, now, as you said, the people under your roof, you know, you're talking, but a mass majority of the people are not under your roof or under anybody's roof, and they're just trying to grapple with the daily traversals of life. And how do you think they need to put that in perspective then, if they're not under that kind of guidance? How do they put in perspective a Dylan roof? and what he did? How do they put in perspective the starvation and things? How do they put in perspective the alt-right and what they're doing physically to black people? Could you explain that a little bit?
Well, the thing is, what we try to understand is that these things have been going on ever since the beginning of time.
Okay.
Babies have died in biblical days. There were people, families that were slaughtered back then. So we can't really say that. The sister that was on earlier said that, you know, who knows why God does what he does? Nobody knows the mind of God. But everybody born is going to die one way or the other.
Okay.
It sounds harsh, but it's just as true as it can be. We're going to go either by natural death or by accident or by plane crash or by getting shot in the head or whatever. We all are going to leave here one way or the other.
Uh-huh.
It has always been, it's sad because sometimes we lose someone we love in a very tragic manner and we say, how in the world can God allow that to happen? But the thing is, all of us are going to leave here one way or the other.
Right.
And that has been going on since the beginning of time. And the things that we try to instill, if you, evil has always been in the world. There's never been a time when evil did not exist. We just finished talking about the evilness of the slave master. Evil has always been in the world. It will never go away. What we have to prepare our people for is to realize, and one of the things, and I want to finish that sentence, but one of the things I think would help, we have so many brilliant black people who are out of the church, who have so much understanding and so much outlook. And all many of them want to do is just pontificate on the failings of religion. But if those people were inside the church, that would help.
Okay.
That would help a lot. That would be a big help in the church. One standing outside the church, criticizing the church, doesn't work. You can't make change, effective change in the church, unless you're on the inside.
Okay. All right.
I'd like to ask Reverend Rogers, is it?
Yes.
Yes. Greetings to you, brother. How are you?
Doing fine. How are you?
And I asked you how you are because when you said you felt battered and bruised, you know, those of us that criticize, I'll speak for myself, I am very compassionate. You know, I've been in the church for many, many years. I just couldn't take what I was seeing. I couldn't take seeing our people being led so blindly to give all of their money, you know, to not to God. They'll say it's to God, but to the pastor. We know what kind of junk goes on in the church. And personally, I couldn't take it. And so I have several friends that are pastors, and they all teach on one level or another about black liberation theology. But what I've been told by every one of them is that if they get too deep, if they get too real about that liberation message that is written, not about us, but, you know, we can use for us, that their congregations will get mad. So what is your response, your response to that? How do you get through to a congregation that is so brainwashed into being passive and not asking questions?
Well, the thing is, you have to raise a people. We always talk about, you know, even in African religions, there's a certain type of raising of people from one level to another level to another level to another level. And what a pastor has to do is to raise his people. He has to feed them so that when he gets stronger and his words get harder and more harsh, they're able to digest it. And as he grows with them and begins to speak more bluntly, they're not wincing. I remember when I first started doing that, you're right, people did wince. I saw people in the congregation, oh, my God, he said white people. Oh, my God, he said that. But, you know, that's to be expected because that's the mentality of our people. We have to love our people. We have to understand where they are.
Right.
And the thing is, we have to grow them. We have to teach them from one level to another level so that they can get to the point where they can digest full truth. Truth is very difficult to digest. And a lot of people get choked on truth. But if you feed them little by little, they get to the point where that system can digest the type of things that you speak about. I speak all the time. I'll say, don't give me no white Jesus. Don't bring me no white Jesus. But see, my people are ready for that. They hear that. They know that's where I'm coming from. I've taught them that all the way up, you know. And I don't get no complaints. I don't get no complaints about that. And I know everybody got, you know, Jesus on the wall with the white man with the blue eyes. I know all of that. I know. Matter of fact, most churches got him on the stained glass window.
Exactly.
You know? But again, we have to take what we have because the masses of our people every Sunday morning are sitting in church. The masses of our black wealth every Sunday morning is sitting in church.
Right.
So we have to take what we have and use it just like we did. We underestimate who we are as people. We think we're dumb. We know what the deal is. So we take what they give us and we use it to our benefit.
Right.
And that's what it's all about.
Okay. That's great. That's very powerful, Pastor Rogers. It really is. I want to come back to that. Don't leave us. Stay with us. I want to bring some more folk on. I want to see if that's the same way in Islam. I've got a brother who is on that's representative of Islam. So when I come back, I'm going to get to him. And then I have some people on who are thinkers in terms of none of it's making a difference. You don't need no church. Don't need all that. So I will bring them on and talk. You're listening to the Black Reality Think Tank. We are here every Tuesday from 8 p.m. Eastern Time to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on www.timeforawakening.com. This is a call-in format. If you'd like to participate in this conversation, our call-in number is 215-490-9832. I repeat, 215-490-9832. And you can call and participate in this conversation. There's no problems. We're not here to argue with you about religion or any of that. That's not what this is about. This is a think tank. This is where we're going to just provide our thoughts and look at situations that impact our community and our people. I want to take a quick music break. I want to come back and ask Sister Yan to continue with what she does. Let's take this very quick break, and we'll be right back.
Father, help us. Send some guidance from above. These people got me getting older, y'all. People get colder. Most of us only care about money making. Selfishness got us following the wrong direction. Wrong information always shown by the media. Negative images is the main criteria. Infecting the young minds faster than bacteria. Kids wanna act like what they see in the cinema. Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling under. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling down. It's no wonder why sometimes I'm feeling under. Gotta keep my faith alive till love is found. Now ask yourself.
Where is the love? Where is the love?
That's all we got.
One more, one more.
Something's wrong with it. Yeah. Something's wrong with it. Yeah. Something's wrong with the good world, world. Yeah, we only got one more, one more. That's all we got. One more, one more.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Brother Timothy, where is the love, my brother? Where is the love? That was the Black Eyed Peas raising that question. Where is the love? Where is it, Brother Timothy? Is your minister?
Dr. Father, that's something that we have to evolve into, love. You know, some of us have to learn to love. We have interdependence. We have custodial love. We have love that we're codependent on, but we have to find the level within ourselves. But Dr. Rogers, I like your introduction. I like your guests. I like this conversation. I'm going to talk about four people, but the four people that are my favorite are the ones I'm going to talk about the most. That is Daddy Grace, Noble Drew Ali, Elijah Muhammad, and Father Divine. And I'm going to say that as a nationalist, as a Pan-Africanist and a Black Muslim, that one thing that you do learn as a first degree in the student enrollment is who is the original man? The original man is the Asiatic Black man, the maker, the owner, the cream of planet Earth, God of the universe, of his universe. And studying in the nation, we go on the outside of America and we go back to a Nile Valley civilization when at one time, 35,000 years ago, we lived in peace. Not the kind of chaos that you see in America.
Okay.
And if you listen to David Walk in his appeal, he talks about there is no slavery on the planet like that shadow slavery in America. And in understanding that, going back to the Nile Valley civilization, we want to know how we lived, what we did, the economics we had, the university we had, how we treated one another, and then there was the invasion with the Greeks and the Romans.
Okay.
I'm going to go further to that to say, Dr. Rogers, that in the nation, we know that the Bible was used as a poison book to put us in slavery.
Okay.
So Elijah Muhammad and people that he studied under, Master Farad Muhammad and other folks, took that book and took out the best of it to get us where we are at today. Mm-hmm. And some people may say that Elijah Muhammad was pro-black. They looked at his program of economics, politics, and upliftment, and race as racism. But it was not. Because he was pro-black doesn't mean he was anti-white. I'll give you an example of Father Divine.
Yeah.
Let's look at Father Divine. Father Divine, to me, had many phases. Welfare was one. He didn't allow any, he was for the oppressed. And if his followers, they were not on welfare, he fed them. When it came to race, Dr. Roger, if anything, he was more civil rights. He talked about lynching in the 30s and went to the government and said they should stop it. If you looked at his patriotism, he always called America the kingdom of God.
Right.
And he used the Declaration of Independence. And he talked about communal living, and then he lived in the quarters in which he built him and his followers.
Right.
And lastly, He had an economic program.
Yes, he did.
So I can't go for, I can sit in the church or a mosque. And we're not looking out for people that look like me that are black. And a part of Marcus Garvey's machine was a part of Booker T. Washington's machine.
Yes, it is.
Booker T. Washington, Elijah Muhammad's machine were the same machines, and that machine we can use today. Because Elijah Muhammad, examples of business in your community, controlling your politics and your real estate and your schools, is something that we're lacking now in the United States of America that we need to get back.
Right.
So when people tell me I'm going to sleep in a church or a mosque, I give examples of these four men. But my favorite ones are Father Divine and Elijah Muhammad.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. That's exactly right. Area code 414-324. What is your take on this subject of the value?
Good evening, Dr. Rogers. Spiritual. How are you?
Fine, my brother. How you doing?
I'm doing fine today. I'm doing fine.
Good.
I guess for me, you know, I think the theology that we deal with causes confusion. And to end the confusion and all the other labels and all the other stuff, you know, my contention is, who are we? We're African people. We're an African people. And I think everybody in our right mind know that if African people recognize that fact on the continent, throughout the diaspora, and embrace that, close ranks, pull our resources. If you want to believe in Jesus, fine, you do that. Don't proselytize. You want to believe in Islam? Fine. You do that. Don't proselytize. You want to believe whatever you want to believe, even if it's indigenous, whatever that is, religion. My point is, just like Malcolm said, if I'm coming to the table to deal with the issues that are truly affecting our people, especially as it relates to the European who and what he has done to us and what he has given us, the confusion that it has caused, I know, because my religion is El Islam, and if I talk about El Islam, there's going to be some, you know, some disagreement, some challenges. Just like if you come in talking about Christianity or Seventh-day Adventist or whatever, Black Hebrew Israelite. My point being, let us be one Africa. Let us come together, kick all the other folks off the continent, control those resources, control that land, develop jobs. When I watched this piece on 60 Minutes the other night about this think tank, not even a damn think tank, they're doing it at MIT, created, build a new building, anything that your mind can imagine.
Right, I saw
they
that.
Put the resources and the technology and the ingenuity to making it happen. Right. They have a thing now you can put on your head. I can speak to you and give you questions. That computer in that will kick you into your brain, and you will speak the right answer.
Right, that's right. Brother Ocean, you know, let me ask you, what when you say proselytize, just kind of let us know what is it that you mean.
What I'm saying is, I don't want you coming in there talking about Christianity, talking about Jesus. I don't want you coming in talking about Islam, Muhammad, or Buddha, or Krishna. We have a situation that is a physical. Yes, I agree, we could deal with it spiritually, but we are not, we're all on different spiritual planes. But one thing is for sure, we don't catch hell because we Baptist or Jehovah Witness or AKA or Omega Psi Phi or NAACP or Urban League. Male, female, whatever. We catch hell because we African, because we black. That's why we catch hell. So I ain't talking about pumping up and your religion and your theology and your concept. No, the bottom line is, what are we going to do about our situation and our future?
Right.
We have to get out of, and the worst thing that clings us to these Caucasians and gives us this hope is their religion, their Christianity.
Right, right.
I don't give a damn how black we want to make it. I mean, I agree with Bishop Henry Turner McNeil. He says God is black, God's got to be black. Because if God ain't black, I don't know. Because if God is a white man, there is no hope. When you look at how these people are and what they have done and what they continue to do to us.
Right. Okay. Reverend Rogers, what do you take? What is your take on that in response to my brother Oshie's remark?
I didn't quite hear the whole question.
What is your response to the idea of prophesizing about the various religious ideologies when you're trying to talk to people and getting the community to liberate, not only just people under your roof, but everywhere, people in the community, our community.
I think one of the things that the brother said is right. We catch hell because we're black. That's the main reason. It's not because of our religion necessarily. We've been catching hell in America ever since we've been here. Every first black man or woman to do anything, that is the prime reason why we're suffering. I don't think we can lay that at religion. I think that one of the things that we have to understand is that the religion itself is a means for us to elevate ourselves and continue to go forward.
Okay.
As we deal with the various things that we have in our lives, various disappointments, the various heartaches, the various strength, even dealing with the history of our people, it makes you angry. You know, a lot of people can't look at programs like Roots. They can't look at programs like 12 Years a Slave because it makes you angry. And one of the things that we want to do is try to get people to move beyond that and to understand that did happen and it's part of our history. We must always maintain and realize that happened.
Right.
But yet we are here. And we know that the white man did not do us a favor by giving us religion. We never thought he did. I've never heard a black preacher say that. I think a lot of times it's overblown that the black church has used Christianity to help enslave our people. I think that's a fallacy. I think that's, a lot of people they'll latch on to that because it sounds good. But I've never heard a black preacher say that. I've never heard a black preacher say that white folk did us a favor by giving us Christianity or any other religion, And again, like the brother said, we are catching hell basically because we're black.
Okay. All right.
I want to respond, Dr. Rogers.
Right, go right here.
So we're in a time where we're in very serious trouble, as everybody knows. Everybody sees what's happening to us. We've been killed just in mass. As a matter of fact, I was watching the news, a reliable news network, and it was reporting that police killings are in the top 10 reasons that people are for murder. Police murders are in the top 10. Of reasons why people are getting killed. I said it two different ways, but you understand what I'm saying. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. Go ahead. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, yeah. So they're killing us off, and there's no consequences.
Right.
The police are now the arm of violence. It have been the arm of violence in America, and they're just killing us at will. This is what's happening to us is so serious that we have to take these things that we're talking about very seriously.
Right.
So the truth about the Christian church is that it has been weaponized. I've been in church and I've heard people say, thank God for, white people going to Africa and taking us out of savagery and bringing us Jesus. That's a lie. Hmm. So we do have to teach the truth. The liberation message is critical. I'm a believer in that. But we also have to teach the truth because a lot of our people are still carrying those lies in their heads.
Right.
I had a young man just expressed to me in such a devastating way that when he prayed, and I shared this a long time ago, when he prays, he can't get the white Jesus out of his head. And it was really, really messing with him. I can't get this image of a white Jesus. I believe Jesus is black, but I can't get it out of my head. So Dr. Clark said that, whatever your religion, I'm in agreement, we must use it for our liberation.
Right.
But when we have the level of brainwashing, self-hatred, lack of self-worth that's in the church where our people are, that has to be addressed. And that comes from the deification of Eurocentric culture. That's what the type of Christianity that's been taught to us is a deification of Eurocentric culture.
Okay.
So we got to get rid of that. That's one of the reasons it's kind of difficult to get that black liberation message in, because we still have that deification of the white man is God. Okay. The white man is supreme. Right. That's way down in the subconscious that has to be pulled out.
Okay.
So this is, go ahead. I can hold on.
I just wanted to see if, make sure that all of our, that there are some other callers on. I didn't know whether they wanted to say something. Area code 586-573. Any remarks? Anything you wanted to add to this, or are you just listening?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Dr. Rogers.
Yes.
Listen, I don't know if it's just, well, here's the deal.
Okay.
I'm listening to the show, and when your other guests speak, I can hear them crystal clear. But when you speak, I have to turn up the volume on my electronic device 2 or 3 notches just to hear what you're saying.
Okay.
And then
okay.
Other people talk, and then I have to turn it back down because they're coming through too loud.
Okay.
I don't know if that's just a matter of my electronic device or not, but it has happened in the past.
Okay.
I just thought I'd bring that to your attention, because I don't want to miss what you're saying, but it is difficult to hear you. Everybody else comes through clear,
okay.
But the volume when you speak is very low for
very
some
low.
Reason.
Okay, I will take a look at that.
Yes, sir. And in essence, that's why I was calling. But I do have two quick questions, if you don't mind. I'm wondering if any of your guests have read The History of the Negro Church by Carter G. Woodson.
Oh,
I'm just
yes.
curious.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, indeed. Reverend Rogers, have you read that?
Yes. Oh, yeah, that was required reading. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
all right. Did you have a question about that, my sister?
No, sir. It's on my reading list. I'm currently rereading The Miseducation of the Negro, and Dr. Woodson speaks to the Negro Church in that book as well.
Right. Yeah.
How the theology that a lot of black ministers or Negro ministers, what have you, were taught was just, you know, regurgitated
right.
stuff that the white folks had chewed up and spit out.
Exactly.
You know, that's
exactly.
what was taught in the schools of theology. You
yeah.
know what? One quick question, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
In the King James Version of the Bible, I'm told there's 66 books. I might have counted it at one point. But in the Catholic version, there's 7 more books than in the King James Version.
Right.
And there are some people who insist that the Bible is the Word of God. However, who decided to take out those extra 7 books from that King James Version?
Right.
And you know, have 7 more in the Catholic version.
Yeah.
You know, it's something to think about. I think God, the Creator, gave us brains and reason to think and the power of logic and the power to think. And sometimes... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I was going to respond to you.
I was told that in some religions, study is mandatory. Study, getting down to the truth, is mandatory in some religions, I'm told.
Mm-hmm.
However, in the Christian religion, it seems like it's all about faith. Faith this. Forget reason. Forget logic. Just go with faith.
Right.
Don't study. Don't reason. Don't logic. You know, don't use that stuff. Just
that's right.
Go with faith.
That's what
yes.
we're talking about. That kind of teaching has ruined us as people. But the books
right.
the books that you're talking about is the Apocrypha. And they are had they have been pulled out, and a lot of them it was a political process, and it was done under the Catholic Church had a lot to do with it, and even as we went into the Protestant movement, the Protestantism as well had those books pulled out, because again the Bible has been weaponized and it's being politicalized, and it has been very clearly. Visual of that, and some of the books, if you look at them, that have been pulled out are very powerful. They're very powerful books that need to be considered in any teaching. So you're right. Let me ask Reverend Rogers: Do you use any of the Apocrypha in terms of your teaching with your congregation?
I have used several books: the Book of Mary, the Book of Enoch. I've used those books. Of course, they can't follow me with those because those books are not in the Bible, but I refer to them in sermons, yeah, as
okay.
well.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Sister. I'll definitely check that microphone issue. I appreciate your comments and call to that. Area code 252-503. Is there anything you would like to add to this discussion, or you just missed it? Okay, I guess you're just listening. Let me go.
Hello?
Yes, uh-huh. Area code
I was just tapping in kind of late. I just got on the call like 15 minutes ago, but so far I've felt like this is a powerful conversation that needs to be had. I will say I definitely think this is just a conversation that needs to be had in a broader perspective within our community, because one of the sisters said something about, or it might have been one of the brothers saying about, it's really like faith-based as far as the Christianity perspective we got, rather than really studying and making it logical based. So yeah, just so far within what I've gained in this conversation so far, I definitely think this is a great conversation that needs to be had in our community. That's all I got to add for right now.
Okay, thank you, my brother. I appreciate that.
Thank you, young brother.
Yeah. Brother Oshie, you want to add to some of the comments that you had, and then I'm going to go to Brother Marcus. Brother Marcus, I'll come to you right after Brother Oshie finishes. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Thanks, Doc Rogers. Yeah. And just let me say that I'm not against anybody's religion. Believe what you want to believe. But being a Pan-Africanist, being a cultural nationalist, I understand that the religions have caused great division amongst our people. In fact, I would say the religions are the number one hindrance to the unification of African people on the continent and every damn place else. I'm not saying for you to get rid of your religion, but what has happened is you're trained and taught to put that first and foremost. And I'm trying to say is what should be first and foremost is the survival, and even more than survival is the living of African people, self-determining, self-respecting, self-defining, independent, liberated, sovereign. But the religions that we have will prevent us from ever getting to that point.
Okay.
And it's sick around the planet. We stick around the planet with it. So I want to add that.
Okay.
But, you know, I love us so dearly. I understand and see our potential because of what we have done. We believe in a religion, a theology, particularly Christianity, that was stolen from us. And what they said, what the Caucasians said, is what you had was myth, was fairy tale. But the same thing, all of it, the Caucasian has no originality. Corrupted the whole damn thing, and he says, what I have is historical. What I have is fact. And there's nothing to prove none of that except for the Caucasian's word. And we know what a liar he is.
Eat it, Brother Oshie.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay. I just wanted to let our listening audience know, too, that immediately following the Black Reality Think Tank, we have the Warren Ballantyne Show that comes on at 10 o'clock Eastern Time here. It immediately follows this program. So if you could want to stay tuned and listen to the brother, it's a very dynamic message. So it's the Warren Ballantyne Show. As you know, he's well known for his positions and his philosophy. So that's, like I said, immediately following this program. Brother Marcus, anything you want to add to this conversation?
Yes, definitely.
I lost that, Brother Marcus. We're losing.
Garvey. You. Okay. Yeah, you hear me?
I can hear you now, right.
Yes, so after Garvey died, there was a brother by the name of Carlos Hoops that came behind Garvey, and he picked up the baton, but he took the religious element out of the Garvey movement. You see, he said your religion and your politics is your personal thing. you know, because he understood it. Well, he was an atheist, and he understood that the God is a human construct. The concept of God came out of the minds of men to explain things that man himself couldn't explain.
Right.
So the man said, there has to be a power greater than myself, because, you know. So, you know, as Brother Oshi said, it's racial economic cooperation is the only salvation for black people. Short of that, you know, it's you know, it's futility. Anyway, take care. I know the time is short. Thank you.
Doc, I want to say something because I know we're getting close to the 10 o'clock hour.
Yeah, go right ahead. Go right ahead.
What that brother just said just really triggered something in me. Religion has taken the place, especially Christianity, and another faith I was a part of, which is Baha'i faith, is taking the place of being African and putting ourselves first. I think somebody else made reference to that, but it is taking the place of the thing that's the most important thing for us, and that's our very survival. You know, we've been taught erroneously. We've been taught that our bodies really don't matter. What matters is the afterlife. We've been taught not to be angry. You damn well better be angry that we're being killed off. We've been taught not to do this and do that. We've been taught to act like Europeans through this spirit, through this religion. So, again, those erroneous teachings we need to get rid of. We can't be free operating from a European mindset.
Right.
Or else we would have been free already.
Okay.
We got church. Listen, as we know, Christianity is global. And the teachings are still dominated by Eurocentric culture. I sent you this email, Doc, about some pastors in Kenya. They're getting on a bandwagon now. They see that you can make a lot of money by ripping off the illiterate in Africa. And so they brought this guy in, who was an actor, and he was a tall white guy dressed like Jesus, the hair and everything. And these Africans, it's Dr. Mumbi's show, if anybody wants to check it out. These Africans, there are hundreds of them, all in the streets following this guy because they're being told that this was the actual Jesus coming back. And so they believe it. They believe that Jesus is back now. And this guy is a white actor from America. They actually arrested him. You know, but these are the things, so much damage is being done, and I keep saying this, and I mean it. If we're going to use Christianity, you know, as a method of liberation, we have got to tell the truth, and there has to be some accountability. When people do these shenanigans, we got to call it for what it is.
Right.
And I'm very serious because, you know, again, the brainwashing is deep. You cannot do anything with anyone who is brainwashed. And we got thousands, if not millions.
Okay. Well, you know, I mean, this is an ongoing series that we're doing on the black church and its significance in the black community, as well as its liberation impact. And so we're going to be continuing this conversation. We are at the closing hour. I thank all of you for your participation. Sister Yan, I appreciate you. For helping me and the co-hosting of this program, Reverend Rogers, happy that you came on and take whatever heat that was going to come, but it didn't. Very good presentation, my brother. And
Not personal. Please, I got to interject that.
Right. Okay. Sounds good. But anyway, we will be back next Tuesday at 8 o'clock, and we will again continue to discuss some of the ideas and thoughts that we have here. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful and productive week. And we will see you next Tuesday. Black is you, black is me.